There's been some big iron moving in and out of the back room and back rooms and bowels of the Daily Astoria newspaper building here in Astoria. The big iron was the exchange on the fly of the main printing press of the newspaper, moving out the old and bringing in the new. A printing press for a newspaper is much like the transmitter for a radio station or an engine for a car. At least that's the historic role of the printing press in the newspaper business. The saying goes, don't mess with a man who owns a printing press. But now that we're in the digital age, if there is one, perhaps the old political saying is softening around the edges. Today on After Deadline, we're going to turn the tables on the Daily Astorian staff and grill them about a newsworthy item concerning not only their new printing rig down in the ink-stained back room of the Exchange Street digs, but also about the future of newsprint, the gathering of news, and the impact all of this may have locally and regionally. I'm Doug Sweet, and I'm stepping in this morning as the host of the After Deadline show so that the usual protagonists can sit on the other side of the microphone and answer some questions. My guests today are Steve Forrester, the publisher of the Daily Astorian, Patrick Webb, the editor of the same, and Carl Earle, the man with two first names, who slings the ink for your daily dose of news. Well, welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So tell me about, listen, why don't we start with, I think Carl is the expert on the press. So what did you take out and what did you put in?
What we took out was a 1970 Goss Community Press. It was brand new when it was installed in the building. It had been running there since 1970.
Was that when the building was built?
Yes, that was the original construction of the building. And it served its job well. It ran for 40 years and kept everything going, just humming along. It did some transitioning into the color age when everybody, you know, USA started setting the standard for everything's got to be in color. So it did a little bit of that for us, but finally it got to a point where it was tired and couldn't keep up with the demands of the color age.
Well, I took a tour and I've seen it before because, you know, we've been getting the current for the radio station printed at the Daily Astorian for years. So, you know, and I've seen some of the other changes, the kind of things about getting the information to you to get printed and that sort of thing, how that's changed. But for somebody who never took the tour of your back room, what does a printing press look like?
Well, a printing press really
For a newspaper, anyway.
Right. A newspaper press is, when people talk about a press, they think of one big giant machine where it's really a bunch of small machines that all work together. To print ink on, you know, what we call a web or one side of the paper, you need one unit to do that. And in order to print multiple pages, you've got to have more and more units. Same thing with color. If you want to add a second color, that takes another unit. So all of this compounds onto how much is your press? How many units does your press consist of? Mm-hmm. And so it is lots of components all working together. You can take one of the components out and that will reduce what you're capable of doing, but the press itself will continue to run.
So the idea is what? You have a big roll of paper and
you have a big roll of paper that on our old press, the big roll of paper set down underneath the unit, and as it spun off and fed right in the middle of the unit as it came up, it would get the printing on it. The ink would transfer to the paper. And then that big stream of paper would continue on down the press line until it got to the center of the press or the folder, and that's where all of the different pages are collected as one. They get a fold, they get another fold, and then it's cut off. So as the paper comes off the press, off the folder, it is essentially a completed paper.
So you push a button and the paper starts going through and you have to connect it some way to make it pull it through.
Right. The,
and so
the
it's going
units,
up and down, around. And
yep. The units themselves pull the paper through because of the impression in the center. Mm-hmm. The folder also has rollers on it that pull the paper down the line. So those all have to work in combination. And if you get one of those out of whack where one of them's not pulling or it's pulling too much, it causes you problems. So it's really
fine-tuning. Okay, so what did you put in the place of your old press, and how in the heck did you get old one out and the new one back
in. A lot of work and moving fast. We what we put in was a combination of Tenser 4-highs. Tenser is the manufacturer of a 4-high, which is basically four press units stacked on top of each other so that you can print color in a short span. And then we also put in a new folder, an upgraded folder from what we had, and some community units off on the front of the press or the nose that gives us more page capacity. Each unit can print four broadsheet or four standard newspaper pages at once. And so the more pages you want to do, you have to have more units. It took us, depending on the timeline of where you say we started, anywhere between 10 and 13 days to stop printing, rip out the old press, put the new press in, and start printing again. And it was a feat to behold when you saw these guys working. That we had some installers from Britain Services. They're out of Rockford, Illinois. And three guys, I've never seen three guys work so efficiently in my life, where they were able to come in and get the equipment out, get the equipment in. Everything was safe. Nobody got hurt.
I heard there was a forklift traffic jam down there at one point.
Yeah, at one point, we had a forklift to get the equipment. We had to take the equipment off a truck in our parking lot, then drive it around the building and then through the garage door that goes into the press room. And the forklift that we had to do that was really just a shade too big to get through that door while carrying something. So there were times when we would pull up the outside with the big forklift and basically hand off the equipment to a smaller forklift that would just back up a few feet inside the building. Then the big forklift could lower its boom down, get inside the building, and then pick the equipment back up again. Hmm. And then we had to back the little forklift out of the way to let the big one pass it and get the equipment into place.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, it was, you know, there was some times when we were looking at it thinking, we're an inch too short on the ceiling. They're not going to make it. But, you know, we managed to get everything in there.
How is it unusual to, I mean, it's, you don't have to do this very often, moving a press or replacing a press. Is it common to buy a press somewhere and move it in and put and build it? You know,
it is.
It almost seems like a part of the building.
It is becoming, you know, it's more common as the economy has gotten worse over the years that people aren't going out. You know, it used to be that a lot of the places would buy a press, they would run it for 20 years hard, never worry about doing maintenance to it, and then once it was just done, they would rip it out and put a new one in. That was common practice. It still is a little bit in the commercial industry. Newspaper industries, not so much. Some of the bigger papers still do that type of operation. Mm-hmm. But you know, our size, medium size, and small newspapers that have presses, they can't afford to do that kind of work. So, you know, we need our equipment to last longer. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we had a press that lasted 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, a lifespan of a press is between 20, 25 years before it's time to replace it.
We're talking to Carl Earl, who's the press man. I guess that, I don't know what your title is.
Exactly. My title is actually systems manager, corporate systems manager.
Yeah. I'm not just the press. No, you're not just ink stained fingers.
No, I'm not just ink stained fingers. Yeah. Yeah. My duties, I supervise the press and the mailroom at the Daily Historian, as well as building operations.
And you've been doing it a while.
This is coming up on 19 years this
May. We have also Steve Forrester here, and Steve, what was the decision making about, you know, putting in a new press? I mean, obviously, you know, when the old one starts wearing out, you got to think about that. But is there something that you are looking at that you think that maybe you've got a vision in the future that maybe some people don't have a clue about putting in a new press?
Well, the simple answer is that we had to do it. As okay. Carl has intimated already, the there was no point putting more money into that old press. And our initial plan was to build a new building.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at land out by the airport to do this and buy a new press and so forth. And we backed away from that about a year ago, I suppose, and it's good that we did. We backed away from it actually before the great crash happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sort of in a lull, and Carl and Jim Stanovich, who's our press room supervisor, found this press, used press, in Illinois. It's a product of the bankruptcy of the Chicago Sun-Times. So in a sense, this is the flip side of the recession, that there are some bargains to be had. And in all candor, we got a very good buy here. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of technology, added a lot of capability to our business for a very, very good price.
Mm-hmm. What is printing on newsprint, does this do more than newsprint? I mean, I don't know exactly what the parameters of a press like that are.
It will do, I would say for general purposes, yes, it does newsprint. A lot of people want to see glossy stuff, and this isn't that type of press.
Mm-hmm.
But it does do different stocks of paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have some things that come out on a nice, bright, white, heavier paper that will run.
Yeah.
And it can go all the way to a light, real lightweight.
Sure.
Like,
so you invest money in a new press. That must mean you think that the newspaper business, the printing business is going to still be viable for some time in the future.
Yeah, exactly. We have a group of commercial customers whom we print for. The Current is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite an extensive list, and with this new capability, we'll be adding to that list.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very good business for us to do that. And in terms of our print product, the Daily Historian, we're in a very nice position right now where our circulation numbers are stable to up. It was 5 months in a row in 2009 where we gained home subscribers, which is not what's going on mainly these days. That's also true of a number of our papers in our company. The
mm-hmm.
Chinook Observer
mm-hmm.
Also has very good mm-hmm. numbers, and so do our Manzanita and Cana Beach papers.
How many papers do you print on a weekly basis or a monthly basis? Different things. I mean, you know, from
25, rough number off the top of my head, but yeah, quite a few. We're coming out with a press tab today where
yeah.
we actually list, you know, the majority of our customers.
So the idea is that they do mm-hmm. they write all the articles, do the design, the layout, or whatever, in their own home
mm-hmm.
offices or whatever, and then they send it over to you electronically, and
mm-hmm. yep, and then we take care of it from there and give them a printed product.
So this is a nice combination of the digital age and the printed word.
Oh, exactly.
Age.
Yeah, your listeners will be amused to know that Michael McCusker's newspaper, the Times mm-hmm. Eagle, is going to rise from the ashes or something. I'll say that.
The ashes of the digital age.
Of the digital age. And Mike got digital.
Yeah.
He didn't really get digital. A friend of his has gotten digital and is helping him out.
Yeah.
And so it will make an appearance on our new press. And
that's amazing. I don't know if that's I don't know what that's going to do to his mind.
Yes.
Because he really is one of those guys who still writes, handwrites things, you know,
uh-huh.
down when he writes.
So, I'm sure. Yeah.
With a pencil. How long a time does it take to print the Daily Historian?
Once we start the press to the time we stop the press, it used to take about 40 minutes. The new press, we're going to be able to do it in probably 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
25
mm-hmm.
minutes.
So the idea for this then is to become more of a region. You want to draw more people to do business with you here.
Well, we
so
are
becomes then you become a regional.
Yeah, we already are a regional publisher, and,
publisher,
and
yeah.
this tab that Carl mentioned, it's in today's Historian. You'll see it. All of our various products that we print are in there. Ones that we own, like the Observer, or the Citizens, and ones we don't own, like the Seaside Signal and the Kenna Beach Gazette and Hipfish and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we're a regional publisher now. We expect that this will extend the reach of our region that from which we draw commercial customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We also have Patrick Webb here, who's the editor of the Daily Astorian. What do you think in terms of the beauty of the product, or you know how the Daily Astorian looks, or anything else that you deal with? What do you think is going to be an effect of this?
Well, we're very excited about the fact that we have the new press, and we're getting over 3 weeks of working what I've called the vampire shift to get it all done, to be printed at another location and then trucked back so that our carriers can deliver it on time. So hopefully no one has actually noticed that the paper's been lying.
Wait a minute, what's this vampire shift?
Oh, well, a couple of us in the newsroom worked sort of a modified graveyard shift from 1 to 9 a.m. So we set our alarm clocks for midnight staggered into the office when it was all dark and tried not to set off the alarm and put out the paper. We were sort of like squirrels or something, or some nocturnal beasts working late into the early morning hours. And everyone would sort of saunter in about 7 or 8, as they do in the office, and we'd be bleary eyed and we'd have had too much cups of coffee. But the paper was done, and that was sort of the adventure we've been on last 3 weeks.
It changed your whole schedule because you had to get the thing to somewhere else to get it printed.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. The Longview paper was very gracious in agreeing to print the paper for not quite 3 weeks. It's been about that during that period, and we had to back up. Our deadline is 11 o'clock to get the newspaper to the Jim Stanovich, who has been mentioned earlier, who's our wonderful pressman. And if I don't get it to him by 11 o'clock, with all the details, all the black negative plates that get put into metal plates that get wrapped around the press, mm-hmm. he comes out with a cutlass and severs my head. And
he certainly threatens to.
Yes. So it's an incentive for myself and my colleagues to get the news done. And what we had to do was essentially back up from 11 to 7 a.m., and by doing so, it disrupted newsroom operations. All the reporters had to work sometimes modified split shifts, get their stories in a lot earlier. And then a couple of us, Max Charlton, who's one of the unsung heroes of the paper on the copy desk, he and I worked the night shift. Sue Cody was another key player. She's the deputy managing editor of the paper. A lot of people know her from different things in the community. And she was the real linchpin because she coordinated things during the day. I've been teasing her about having a cushy day job, but really she was the key to this. So basically we backed everything up and tried to keep the news as fresh and new as possible, but within the parameters of meeting that deadline.
You're tuned to KMUN and KTCB, and I'm Doug Sweet, your temporary host after deadline. Well, Patrick, Carl was talking to us about this is going to be better for color and that sort of thing.
Right, I didn't answer your question, did I, Doug?
Are we going to have a big splashy look to the Daily?
Well, you know, the Daily Astorian is what I think is quite a nicely designed paper, but we will definitely have more color capability. Mm-hmm. And Carl already mentioned that big day back on September the 15th, 1982, when our lives changed and our listeners are probably thinking, what was that day?
What the heck is he talking about?
Was the first edition of USA Today. And since then, there's been no turning back for the U.S. print industry. In fact, the world print industry in the reader's expectations that things shall be in color.
Before that, people
were dabbling in color, and some people were doing pretty good work in different places, the Dallas and Kansas City and some other places. But until that moment when the Gannett Company, which is, has a lot of critics in the business, but they put their money where their mouth was and started printing at satellite plants in different places around the country with the print quality and color being the expectation, and we at the time, there was some criticism of the USA Today, but there was also some acknowledgement in the industry that this is, we better follow, otherwise we'll be very much left behind.
I think the criticism was in the depth of the article writing rather than in the look of it, although I thought it was kind of garish, frankly, when I first saw it.
A lot of us did. We talked about News McNuggets, and we said, won't get us doing that. But on the other hand, it was a wake-up call to that what could be done.
Yeah.
And what Carl's been talking about and what Steve's been and other company leaders have been sort of putting the backing is that, hey, we're doing this already, and we're going to do it even better with the color capability.
Well, first of all, I think it's highly unusual that a town this size or an area this size has a daily newspaper. Do you think is that correct?
Oh, it is.
I don't think many places this size have regular local news coverage.
No, and it's a legacy of what this town was. You know, the oldest American settlement west of the Rockies, and DeWitt Clinton, Ireland, started the Astorian in 1873, preceded by the Astoria Marine Gazette. But he started it in 1873, and it quickly took off. And of course, the truth of it is we're a regional newspaper.
Right.
We sell more papers outside Astoria than in.
Mm-hmm.
Astoria is the center of our news gathering, of course. But we're a regional paper reaching all the way down to northern Tillamook County, into Pacific County, and as far as Clatskanie.
Right. Do you, one of the things about that is facing not only, you know, newspapers, I think have we lost Newsweek already, or is it going out, or Time
it's
Magazine?
It's certainly been troubled, hasn't
the,
it?
The weekly news magazines, I know that they're, you know, they haven't been doing well. A lot of newspapers, like you say, the Chicago Sun-Times, you know, many newspapers around the business, around the area, you know, around the country have gone under, facing what? The digital news business?
It's an incorrect generalization to lump all papers together, because the challenges facing metropolitan dailies are quite different than ours. It's much easier for us to define ourselves than it is for the Oregonian to define itself. The other thing that has to be mentioned is that a number of large papers are carrying very high debt loads. We're not in that situation. And, you know, the New York Times is in that category, and the McClatchy papers are, the Seattle Times is in that category too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much more individual. And
is it a decline in readership or in subscriptions, or is it more a decline in the advertising side?
Well, it depends on the paper, but both are happening.
Uh-huh.
With metropolitan papers, they're nibbled at on all sides by competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're all competing for is people's time.
Right.
That's really what we're competing for, because people still read.
Yeah.
It's a matter of what they read and how they read it. And in our case, our mission is to be the news source of this region that we're in. And we do that not only with five print editions, but we have websites. And if a story breaks 5 minutes after the print edition has come off the press, it goes right on the website. And the newspapers that really has profound implications for us are our weeklies.
Mm-hmm.
One of our papers is the Blue Mountain Eagle up in Grant County, where the Aryan Nation is nosing around. And that story broke up there right after she put out her product, Scott Acallister, our editor. And so it went right on the web. And so weeklies now can be daily newspapers. And a five-day-a-week paper like ours really never stops.
Yeah.
So it's not one sort of package anymore. Yeah. It's several packages.
Yeah. Well, I will say, you know, I think there's a kind of a parallel between what you guys do and what a public radio station does in a community this size. You know, we've got the same issues of, you know, subscriptions, you know, commercial support, and then whatever, you know, whatever else we can garner for, in your case,
right,
you know, getting business from outside, you know, the region. in our case, getting foundation grants or that sort of thing.
Yeah. You constantly have to reinvent yourself.
And you have to be local.
You have to be local, exactly. Yeah. No one else is going to come in here and do Astoria's news.
That's right.
Or Seaside's news, for that matter. I mean, we do have a competitor, there's a Seaside Signal, but we're in there more frequently and with more manpower, I think, than they are.
Is a scoop still the thing?
Well, the scoop has been sort of redefined, hasn't it? And we like to think that the scoop is sort of in two forms. It's in scooping by being first, usually, but also the secondary form is by being complete and accurate. So we have the option. Wonderful thing with websites, dailyhistorian.com is our primary website, but we have others, including SeasideSun.com, which does especially seaside news, is that you can break something on the news on the website in the news update column, and then you can update it with new information that comes out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we do that pretty much on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. With things that happen, weather, traffic problems.
The recent shooting of the trooper in Long Beach was a perfect example of that, where that broke on a Sunday.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And we were on it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, this is Doug Sweet. I've been your host for After Deadline today. And my guest is Steve Forrester, the publisher of The Daily Historian, Patrick Webb, the editor, and
managing editor, actually. Yes. Yes.
You've promoted him, and he appreciates that.
Okay. That's
right. Now it's going to go to his head.
And Carl Earl, the man with the ink-stained hands, and hold up your hand. Do you have all fingers and everything?
Yep, all accounted for.
Okay. I mean, that's a lot of big machinery moving around back there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
There are quite a few people in the industry with missing thumbs.
Well, but it's impressive.
Fingers.
It's impressive to come back there and see that thing running. So I don't know if you still ever give tours or, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, I would recommend anybody who wanted to see, you know, how these things happen. It's an eye-opening experience to see. You know, we just see these things appear, you know, in newsstands and stacks here and there, or appears on your front doorstep, you know, if you're a subscriber. And then all of a sudden, you know, how does this thing get there? Well,
we will be showing it. There's smaller groups now. We can't accommodate the larger groups that we used to be able to, but we can do smaller groups, and they'll just let me know they'd like to do this, or let Patrick know.
Oh, give us a call at the Daily Historian, 325-3211.
Well, this has been the After Deadline, and thank you, gentlemen, for coming over and spending the time. And this has been very interesting.
Thank you for hosting
us. Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thanks.